Welcome to News Over Brews, the only podcast that breaks down the best of this week's pop culture over a nice cold beer. Sponsored by PopBreak.com. I am your host and moderator, Al Manarino. This week, we review the season premiere of Doctor Who and talk about the 66th annual Emmy Awards. Welcome to another exciting episode of News Over Brews. I'm Al Manarino, and I'm one of the only people who actually saw Sin City this weekend.
I'm Lucas Jones, and I was supposed to hit the gym and go to the beach today, but instead, I'm stuck inside drinking beer with you two idiots.
And I'm Ryan DeMarco, and I hate people, movies, beer, and everything else.
Wow, it seems like you're in the right place, Rye. Lucas, you mentioned beer. What are we drinking this week?
Well, we're drinking another beer from Old Dominion. It's called Candy. It's a Belgian triple. It's a Belgian-style ale, which is made in the USA. Basically, it's what the name says. It's a Belgian triple. It comes in at 9.5% alcohol. So, like most Belgian triples, you're going to expect a pretty high alcohol beer. But you're also going to get flavors that you normally get from a Belgian. You're going to get spices. You're going to get like a dry sweetness to it. Pours with a golden color, very clear, not a big head on the glass. I really like it. It's more spicy than sweet to me. And I like the fact that it's a dry sweetness. It's not a very, syrupy is the wrong word, but it's not like a very sickly sweet like some Belgians that I've had are. Sometimes they get a little too close into like shandy territory sweetness where it's just like sugar and you don't want that. Personally, I'm a huge fan of this one. Let me just get one more sip here. Yeah, it's like really heavily spiced and I'm really enjoying that. And I think it offsets any kind of sweetness that the malts give it. So it's more on the spicy side than the sweet side, where some Belgians might be on like the sweet side more than the spicy side. At least that's what I'm getting from it. Ryan?
This could be one of the few times I'm actually going to disagree with you. I'm actually feeling the total opposite. I feel like this is lightly spiced and overly sweet.
Really?
Yeah.
Let me get another sip.
I'm going to get one too.
At this point, you guys are just drinking.
Chug. No. Yeah, I mean, personally, it's a little too sweet for my liking. I mean, it's, other than that, it's I like the little bit of the lightly spiced, like I said. Like I'm tasting just a little bit, like a kind of like an afterburn a little bit.
Are you sure your beer's not screwed up? I mean, taste your beer. Switch glasses with me real quick. Because, okay, so Ryan is drinking out of like kind of a multi-purpose chalice glass, whereas I'm drinking mine out of like a closed-top tulip glass, so closer to a whiskey snifter.
Yeah, yours is completely different than mine.
Okay, yeah. that would explain that. So now that we have switched glasses,
I'm going to keep this one.
And I guess I'll
keep Jesus.
It makes a huge difference.
Yeah, it does.
It's crazy that a glass that can one. Change.
All right, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to pause this, and then we're going to come back after I poured it in two similar glasses. Okay, so we're back. I poured the two beers into shaker pints. So now let's go ahead and just... I mean, still excellent.
Yes, I mean, it's... I think the glass kind of ruined it, but...
What, this glass?
No, the other glass.
Oh. Yeah, no, it's, you know, if you ever wondered why the glass can be so important to a beer, let this review show you that why
it's very detrimental to that.
Yeah,
lesson.
Like you want to pick a glass that's gonna so like the glass that I was drinking out of, close to like a narrow topped whiskey snifter, it concentrates the aromatics, so the spices would be more pronounced in that type of glass, where your glass had a more open top.
Yeah,
so the spices were going to be less concentrated. And now that we're drinking it out of shaker pints, which is you should never really drink any beer in a shaker pint.
It's a foul right here. We are going against ourselves. Right now.
to get like more of a neutral thing. I mean, I still really like the beer, but the spices have definitely let up a bit.
Yeah.
I liked it personally more in the closed top because I think the spiced triples I'm more fond of, especially now as we move into September, October.
Mm-hmm.
But in the summer, you might want something that's a little malty or sweeter. So I'm going to go ahead and give it an 8. Like I said, I really like the spices. That's what I look for in a Belgian. So in either glass, I'm going to go ahead and get an 8. But I will say that if you do pour it in that type of a glass, be aware that it will concentrate those spiced aromatics more so.
Yeah, I obviously now my review is kind of flawed. I feel like an idiot now, probably the first 2 minutes of this review. I'm going to go ahead. I can't give it a real accurate review because, you know, I did enjoy it in your glass. I didn't really enjoy it in my glass a whole lot. I'm going to go ahead and probably give it like a 7.5. It was very nice. It was very nice now that I got like a true mouthful of spices.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't overly sweet like it kind of was in my glass. It was nicer now that I had it in a different glass.
Mm-hmm. All right, so that is Old Dominion's Candy, one of their beers in the pinup series, and they're very easy to recognize because on the front of the label there is a 1940s style pinup girl, pinup art on the front.
What strikes you about this girl in particular, Lucas?
That she represents the very robust flavors of the beer.
In other words?
She has a very rounded set of malt and spice characteristics. And she's very, very big on flavor.
I was going to say she has big boobs.
Yeah, she has big boobs also. But no, if there's one thing we want you to take away from this review, it's that glassware matters. So if you are a new beer drinker or you're a seasoned beer drinker and you've been drinking your entire life out of shaker pints like most people do, it might be worth it to go down to Target or Bed some Bath other, yeah, Bed Bath and Beyond. And you see those like craft beer sampler glass packs. Go ahead and pick one up, because they design these glasses specifically for styles to highlight either smells or tastes or whatever, what have you. So it's definitely worth looking into.
I mean, your friends might make fun of you, but you'll get the last laugh, really.
Right, because you're drinking beer that's being properly highlighted by your glassware.
Yeah.
Also, you know, if you happen to find a lady or male friend who is interested in craft beer, you will score major points for pouring a beer into the correct style glass.
That's our dating tips from News Over Brews. on to the news, Al.
Well, I just want to say thank you, Lucas, as usual, for another great review. I wasn't able to find that beer up north, but I was able to review the Ego Homestyle Waffles, and they are just delightful. Because we're doing this podcast at like 1:30 p.m. instead of 2 a.m. in the morning.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere. So you guys are drinking beer. I just made a coffee on my Keurig, and I just had some delicious Ego Homestyle waffles.
This bit is starting to sound like the product placement bit from Wayne's World at this point.
We don't like to be corporate sellouts. No, but yeah, no. So waffles really good. Apparently the beer is good. I can't wait to have it. And yeah, on to the news. And our first, you know, we're going to do this episode a little differently. Usually we pick like anywhere from like 3, 4, maybe even 5 topics. We're going to focus on 2 big ones that happened over the weekend. Actually, one just happened a couple days ago, was the Emmys. And the other one, which is more important, is the newest season of Doctor Who just started. So we're going to start with Doctor Who first. Lucas and I are huge Doctor Who fans. Lucas got me into it. And needless to say, we were more than excited to see Peter Capaldi take over Matt Smith's reign as the 12th Doctor. And, you know, after all this hype, you know, how long have we known that Capaldi was going to be the new Doctor? Like over a year, right?
Yeah, over a year, pretty much. We first saw him in the Christmas special, though. But we knew about it for a while.
First time we saw him was Day of the Doctor.
No, yeah, sorry, not the Christmas
special. We saw him for like a split second in the Day of the Doctor.
The 50th, that was the...
Yeah, that was the Day of the Doctor. That's the name of the special. But yeah, so we've known for a while that Matt Smith was going to
very
get
easy
replaced,
name
and we were really excited to see an older Doctor. Capaldi's a huge, huge Doctor Who fan. He has been his whole life, and it was odd to see because like the last three Doctor Whos have been getting younger and younger. I mean, you started with Eccleston, who's like what, late 30s, then you had Tennant, and then you had Smith, and they just literally looked like the Doctor was going to get younger. By the time we'd see the 16th Doctor, he'd be in diapers. So we were really excited to see maybe this older veteran kind of Doctor, like we saw with John Hurt's Doctor in the Day of the Doctor special. Now, first reaction, Luke, for the 8-minute premiere, which was called Deep Breath. What did you think?
It was good. It was really good. It was better than most of Matt Smith's episodes by far, I think. And not at any fault to Matt Smith, but for whatever reason, the writing on this one was a great way to introduce a new Doctor. It was like a good new Doctor episode.
Did you just compliment Stephen Moffat's writing?
Well, we can neither confirm nor deny that Stephen Moffat actually wrote this episode.
It said written by Stephen Moffat.
Yeah, but you know, he's shady as shit. I wouldn't be surprised if he's got writers chained up in the basement feeding him stuff.
Well, we know he didn't direct the episode. I'd have to look up his name, but it's like a famous indie UK director actually directed the first two episodes, which is really cool. But keep going.
It was really good. They made it about the Doctor, which it should be because it's his first episode. I really like that they established a few things pretty clearly at the outset. The Doctor is not Clara's boyfriend, which got really, really annoying with Matt Smith. And he said it pretty much outright. You know, he said, "I'm not your boyfriend, but it's not your fault if you thought I was." And we also got a little bit of Clara, actually. They gave her good writing. They made her into like an actual character, as opposed to just Matt Smith's arm candy. There were some throwbacks to the old school, not old school, last Doctor. You know, spoiler alert here. Obviously, it's Matt Smith makes an appearance.
His cameo was amazing,
which was cool, and it made the whole thing. It gave a subtle time travel element. Like, this episode wasn't wibbly wobbly, which I was also getting sick of. There was a very subtle time travel element to it, which I really liked, which actually helped to drive the plot. There was also a reference to Amy Pond, which I didn't quite catch at first, but then I was like, oh, Moffat, you sly dog.
Which one was that?
It was the she's trying to reach the sonic screwdriver with her legs, and the Doctor says, oh, I miss Amy,
because her legs were... Her legs went on for days.
Legs for days, yeah. But
that was great.
Yeah, no, I thought it was really good. I actually enjoyed it, which is something that I can't really say for Doctor Who for a while. And I really liked the ending where it's unclear whether the Doctor actually murdered somebody. I think that's really cool.
Or assisted murdered.
I really hope that they don't drag that bit out.
No.
For like 12 episodes. Like, did he?
They probably
him?
Will.
Did he
they probably him? Will.
Yeah. Just leave it and then pick it up later. Do other stuff first. But yeah, overall, I really liked it.
Yeah, I was really excited. I was nervous, honestly. Like, going into it, I mean, there was so much hype, obviously, and I enjoyed Matt Smith's his run on Doctor Who, and I was blown away. I really was, and mostly because of Jenna Coleman's performance, honestly, because she, like, we've seen how people react to new Doctors, and you know, when Rose reacted to Tennant when he took over Eccleston, was not the same. Wasn't the same thing, and I love how they focused. Moffat's really good at like taking a problem head on and telling the audience in the episode itself, like, yeah, we understand your concerns and everything. Like you mentioned with the no flirting between Capaldi and Coleman, because the age gap, and Matt Smith and, you know, and Coleman were so close that, you know, they could have been together, like we saw Tennant and Rose, Tennant and Billy Piper. So, and it was like Moffitt was able to say, like, here are all your concerns about the latest Doctor, and here's the middle finger, I don't give a shit. Accept it. Because this is what he did. I'm not going to ruin Sherlock for you guys, because you really need to watch it, but this is what he did at the beginning of the third season of Sherlock. There was so much hype and so much speculation that went into that third season, he attacked it head on. And that's why what makes him a great writer, and that's what makes him a great Emmy-winning writer, and we'll get back to that later in the episode. So, yeah, overall, I'm really excited to see more of this 12th Doctor. I know, Lucas, you've been saying that he might be the Valyard, which you is like old Who.
Well, it turns out that Moffat is just kind of saying, like, oh, no. He's not going to include the Val. It looks like he's not going to include the Valyard in his story.
I don't know. Don't.
But because when might. You apply like the new numbering because of the War Doctor and the Metacrisis regeneration, the Valyard should have existed between Tennant and Smith, but it's not anymore. And I don't know.
Yeah, but Moffat has mentioned Valyard before.
But yeah, he has, but, you know, I wouldn't expect it. But I did want to make one note. I know Ryan wanted to say something, but I want to make one note real quick. Capaldi is actually the one who is enforcing the no flirting rule. There was an article that like Capaldi actually kind of told Moffat to, like, not force, because obviously Moffat's the showrunner, but said, like, listen, get all of this nonsense out of there. Like, that's not what this guy is about. And it's interesting because, you know, there's a theory that when the Doctor regenerates, he regenerates, his regeneration is based on his past life. So, like, the Ninth Doctor really wanted to stay with Rose. He really liked Rose. And so he regenerated into a younger, cooler, hipper Doctor that Rose would fall in love with. And then, you know, Tennant lost Rose, and Tennant's whole thing was about, like, loss and not wanting to die. Because of his, like, partial regenerations, he knew how painful it was, and so, like, he didn't want to experience that. And so that's why you get the 11th Doctor, who's very, like, running away from everything and, like, not, you know, running away from the idea of death and running away from the idea of regeneration. And then, you know, what's revealed in this episode is that he's kind of made his amends, and he's spent the last 200 years alone. And so he regenerates into this physical manifestation of how old he became when he was by himself with handles.
Yes.
And
I love how he even mentions that too. In the beginning, like, oh, aren't you handles? Like, to saying to
and that
Clara. Keep going.
Yeah, and but still, he's still, you know, after 2,000 years or however old they say he is now, that, you know, he doesn't particularly care to travel alone. So it'll be interesting to see how that develops. Ryan, you wanted to jump in.
I mean, it was kind of regarding to the season, not really the character. Well, do you guys see Peter Capaldi going down as one of the best Doctors? Do you guys kind of have an idea where the rest of the season is going to go? And I was going to actually ask about Jenna Capaldi. How long do you think she'll be on the show for?
Jenna Coleman.
Jenna Coleman.
Did I combine them both? Yeah, you can find them both.
Jenna.
Jenna Coleman.
I
think he has the potential to be a really good Doctor.
Yeah. One of the best?
I mean, he's the closest Doctor that we've had to the Ninth Doctor, which is my favorite. He has the potential to be very complex and a very deep character, which I'm very, very excited for. Also, I'm interested to see how they're going to reconcile Peter Capaldi's past appearances in the Doctor Who series.
And they mentioned that.
They mentioned it, which gave me the Doctor Who flutters.
Which is great.
Deep within my two
hearts.
I've
seen this. I know this face. Like, I've seen this face before. He keeps saying that, like, when he's, like, going through, like, his whole... Every Doctor always goes through, like, that process of, like, oh, I have teeth, or, like, blah, blah, blah. So, and he's seeing his face. He's like, I've seen this face before, which is cool, because he's not only been in Doctor Who, but he's also been in Torchwood, which is a spinoff of Doctor Who. So,
well, and they mention ancient Rome, too, in the episode. They mention Marcus Aurelius and ancient Rome. In the episode, yeah. So it's a throwback to the Fires of Pompeii.
Where he's in it, and coincidentally, so is Karen Gillian. Yeah, Ryan, to answer your question, I think Jenna Coleman is going to leave at the Christmas special. They've already talked about getting her like a love interest this season. It's going to be like another teacher. And we're also seeing like flashbacks because we didn't really see like why Clara wanted to leave, and now it's showing that she couldn't really handle being a teacher. Maybe you saw those flashbacks, Luke, of like her and like the students like
I don't know if it was that necessarily. I just think that was a device to help her use the reverse psychology on the villain.
True.
I think that's what that was. So, I kind of hope they don't give her a love interest though, because why does it always have to be a love interest? Why can't she just leave? She's such a good character that why.
Yeah, but I mean,
they're building up this. It seems like they're getting ready to build her up as like an actual character. Why do they have to make the reason she leaves be a love interest?
Might not be the reason she leaves, but I mean, there was obviously chemistry between her and Matt Smith, and just because like the doctor straight up said like, you know, we're not like that. She has to be alone.
Well, she doesn't have to be alone, but
I'm just saying it's not me. I'm not the writer. I'm just telling you what I know is.
Yeah, but I'm pretending you are so that I can. Address my anger specifically at you.
Ryan, disregarding Lucas completely, I think Capaldi can be something special. It's just tough because so far the first three doctors that I've witnessed, you know, 9, 10, 11, have been all great. They've been fantastic.
Yeah, I was just going to ask that. Yeah.
Lucas has...
He seems like the total opposite.
Yeah, Lucas has his favorite. It's Eccleston. No question. He loves that season. I still can't decide between Tennant and Smith, and I even love Eccleston too. I don't know. Capaldi looks like a really strong candidate for.
Looks promising.
Yeah, I just don't know how long he's gonna last. I think it'd be great if he only lasted like two or three seasons, so he gets some like three strong seasons out of him. Like Smith. Smith was great. His whole run's really good. Half of season 7 could be completely erased, though.
Yeah.
You know, the second half of 7 is amazing, and it's what got us here, which is great. But like you can take bits and you can take episodes out of Tennant's run too. You can take episodes out of Smith's run. So I'd rather Capaldi have like just three solid seasons, you know, and then just go to the next doctor, which would be great. And, I mean, now we have how many more episodes of Who left? 12?
12. Yeah. I think it's going to be a
13 episode season. That's great. I'm It's funny because this whole summer I'm like, I have nothing to watch. There's no good shows.
Well, now we do.
Now we do.
Because we have Who, Archer, and Walking Dead coming up.
Well, this, Walking Dead's not until October. So we have still.
It'll be here before you know.
We still have a couple months.
Four and a half weeks.
Well, it's going to premiere right when we, News Over Brews goes to New York Comic Con. So
yeah, that's Sunday.
That's going to be awesome. And, so we won't be reviewing each Who. Every week. They already do that on popbreak.com. Jason Stives, he writes a really, really great review every week of Doctor Who, regardless if it's a good episode or bad. And he was actually at the premiere, which is great. He had a good time. So, yeah, we'll keep you updated more with like bigger episodes, maybe. Or Lucas will just go on rants about why he hates Moffat. You know.
Moffat!
Yeah, just you know, the normal News Over Brew stuff. So, that was Doctor Who Deep Breath. That was our review, or kind of review, and mostly speculation. And let's go on to our next topic. As we mentioned before, the next topic and our final topic today is going to be the 66th Annual Emmy Awards that just happened on Monday. Now, let's just start right there. Why did this happen on a Monday? Well, a couple of reasons, actually. It's actually a lot earlier than it's supposed to happen. Isn't it supposed to be like around like mid-September, right?
Yeah, it's a weird time for it to happen. Usually not.
Yeah, and the reason it was on a Monday was because it was on the same weekend as the VMAs. Now I don't know why the Emmys thought that it would have any competition against the VMAs because apparently those were terrible. But we're not here to talk about the VMAs. We're here to talk about actual television, and that's the Emmys. The reason that it was on. Earlier in the summer instead of later is because they didn't want it to conflict with the football season, because that they know that football would just absolutely crush the Emmys in ratings, because they usually crush everything outside of The Walking Dead. And so now we have Emmys hosted by Seth Meyers on a Monday in the summer. It was a little weird. And there was a lot of great shows were nominated this year, as usual, because that's the whole point.
It was one of the toughest years.
It was the toughest year, but at the same time, when you actually watch the Emmys, you're like, okay, I know exactly what's going to happen for every award, and which is a little odd, considering that shows like Breaking Bad, True Detective, House of Cards, Homeland, they're all like nominated in the same category, which is, I mean, that's a really tough category. And then, you know, you have Breaking Bad on its last year possible that it can win anything. And, you know, you have McConaughey on his, what are they calling it? It's like the Renaissance, but they were calling it something with McConaughey. I don't know. Regardless. So you had him and Woody Harrelson in True Detective. He just won the Oscar for Best Actor, and now they were going to say, oh, he's going to be the first actor to ever win both Best Actor in Television and Best Actor in Film. So you had all this stuff. So instead of reviewing the entire Emmys, we like to use our best worst surprise, our favorite way to recap an entire event, which is three almost minuscule things that happened. So I guess I'll start off with best. The best thing that happened at the Emmys, it's a tie. I would say a three-way tie between Sherlock winning three Emmys, including Stephen Moffat for writing and Benedict Cumberbatch for playing, you know, the titular character. And then the banter between Julie Louis-Dreyfus and Bryan Cranston, about Tim Watley and Seinfeld, and then this really, really ridiculous kiss that they shared. That was hilarious. And then I think the last thing that would be considered the best thing, Weird Al came out and he added lyrics to famous television shows, including Mad Men and Scandal. And it was funny. It was all right. But the best part is when they got to Game of Thrones, Andy Samberg came out dressed as Joffrey and continued to play Joffrey when what's the actress name? Lena Headley or something?
Yeah, Brian. Lena Headley.
Lena Headley came out and was presenting someone, and, you know, you hear Andy Samberg in the background, "Mother, mother, I've been poisoned." And it's just hilarious. It was the best part of the Emmys by far. All right. What was the worst thing, Rye?
The worst thing was in the comedy segment. It was as predictable as ever, because the last 5 or 6 years, it's been the same damn shows winning. Big Bang Theory, Modern Family, and Veep. Pretty much, just Julia Louis-Dreyfus always wins for that character, which is good. She's a very funny actress,
and it's a good show.
Big Bang, Modern Family is good too. I've watched it. I've caved in because I was like, "Why is this show winning so many damn awards?" And I watched it, and it's actually really funny. Big Bang Theory is a horrible show.
I don't understand it. Parks and Recreation is probably one of the best shows on television, yet it's never won an Emmy, and it's going into its last season. And it really is well-deserved, especially Amy Poehler. She drives the show with a phenomenal cast. And has Ron Swanson ever been nominated?
Never even considered?
One of the most likable and most quotable characters in probably the last decade. I really don't get it. How many times?
You know, there's dozens of other well-written shows, well-produced shows, and they're just completely overshadowed by this bogus that is Big Bang Theory.
Modern Family.
And just the same old ones that win all the time.
Yeah,
it's
like,
annoying.
I can understand Modern Family is a good show. I can understand Jim Parsons is great as Sheldon, but, like, other people are good, too. You know? Other shows are good as well. It's just, like, they're not the best. Yeah. I don't think they are the best. So, you know, rant over for now. We'll rant some more maybe next Emmys. But Lucas, what was the surprise?
The surprise for me was that the Emmys were on. I did not, as Al spits up his
almost spit on my coffee.
I did not know that the Emmys were on. I came home from work, and there they were. So I sat down and I watched the skit with Andy Samberg being Joffrey, which I was angry about because there are spoilers in that little skit. I'm only on season two, and I was very angry.
I'm angry that you're only on season two.
I mean, I've been on season two for the last year and a half, so odds are I'm not going to finish watching it. Honestly, I don't watch a lot of television. I don't have the time. But I will say this. I feel as though I represent a growing demographic of people that, because of work or other conflicts of interest, don't have the time or the willingness to sit down on a Tuesday night at 9 and watch an hour TV show or watch a half-hour TV show on Tuesday night at 9. So the only really television show that I've watched from start to finish is House of Cards. I watched that shit in like 3 days because I had the time and because I could watch it whenever I wanted. I could watch 2.5 hours and then go do the things that I need to do and then come back and watch another hour and a half. So I think that the fact that I didn't even know the Emmys are on might be a signal that network television and like the, oh, it's on Tuesday nights at 9. Oh, well, that's good for you. But for the large, and you know, considering a lot of people our age, like the 18 to 25s are all part-time employees. So like one Tuesday I could be working 5 to 10 p.m. and another Tuesday I might not be working. So it makes more sense for people like me to either watch only shows that are on Netflix or on demand or find other methods of watching television shows besides trying to commit to a Tuesday night at 9 or a Wednesday night at 8. So that's a surprise for me. The Emmys were on. But also I think that's useful in the context of this conversation, that they might want to look at making it easier to access these shows whenever we want. Stop putting them behind a paywall. You know, give me an ad. I don't care. I'll watch the same commercials I'd watch Tuesday nights at 9, but I might want to watch it Wednesday at 3 in the morning because that's when I have time. So maybe that's something to consider for all of you high-level television executives that are listening to News Over Brews.
Well, here's the thing, too, and Seth Meyers brought it up a lot, how the Emmys run on network television, but all the awards that are nominated are pretty much going to cable and Netflix. And it's annoying that they wouldn't, like, NBC wouldn't go with the times and, like, make the Emmys streamable. You can only watch the Emmys on television. You can probably watch it, like, the day after on you know, on their website, whatever, or mobile. But they don't make it streamable, which is really odd, considering that wouldn't you want to bring it to as much audience as possible? I don't know. I'm not an executive. But for those executives that are listening, that Lucas mentioned before, step up your game. You need to seriously get with the times, man.
Yeah. Well, the biggest thing is just give us the access. Because if you don't give us the access, we're going to find a way to get access. You know? So you can either give us the free access and monetize it through advertisements and commercials. You know, a 30-second spot every 10 minutes on like a 25-minute show. But if you don't give us the free access, we're going to find free access on our own. And you're not going to get any of that. So you can either adapt or die, pretty much. And from the way it looks like, death is imminent, which I'm fine with because it's much cheaper.
Well, I think that is going to wrap it up for a very short but awesome episode of News Over Brews.
It wasn't short at all.
You're short.
Regardless, it was a very good episode. Anytime it involves Doctor Who, and beer, I'm intrigued, or coffee in my case. But, you know, stay tuned for, you know, next week's episode. Also, Lucas, tell them about a couple things that we're working on as well.
Yeah, so we're, like, doing stuff.
Well said.
We've got a bunch of new stuff coming out. We've got Behind the Brews, which is a new YouTube segment that we're going to be featuring that goes in and takes a look at some big breweries, some small breweries, and everything in between. Stuff that's local. We've got one in Jersey coming out. We've got one that we're looking at in Connecticut coming out. We're talking to a bunch of different places in the area, Philly, New York. So what we're doing is we're getting in and we're looking at the back rooms, the stuff that you normally don't see in terms of beer production, and finding out what makes these brewers tick. We've got another thing called the Round Table, which started off as an idea for people to help me drink all this beer that I had.
And now it's turned into a full segment.
And so it's turned into a full segment, and it's pretty much an unfiltered look slash listen of what it's like when we all get together and drink beer with other people who like to drink beer. I promise it's not pretentious. It's
a beery good time.
There's some mouthfeel involved.
I'm gonna go with that. It's a beery good time. And our third one is Loot Crate.
Well, it's unboxed.
Unboxed. Yes. And we're going to be looking at Loot Crate in the first one,
yes.
Right now?
So Unboxed is going to be another YouTube segment where we unbox the latest Loot Crate. And if you don't know what Loot Crate is, it's a geek and gamer monthly subscription service where each month they have a different theme and they send you a whole bunch of goodies. Some exclusives, some toys, random stuff. We had our Heroes crate, and the video is going to be posted very soon, probably the same day as this episode, but don't quote me on that. Seriously, don't do it. But, you know, look out for all three of those, and we're still working on other stuff, too, that we can't talk to you about at this moment, because it's not fully...
classified.
It's classified, and also, they might not exist, so we're not going to talk about those right now. And thanks for listening, as always. I'm Al Manarino, and... I shouldn't have had all that coffee. I'm going to be up forever.
I'm Lucas Jones, and as it turns out, I'm secretly an 80-year-old man who doesn't watch television or participate in any of this techno babble that the youths are talking about nowadays.
And I'm Ryan DeMarco, and I have the IQ of a bedroom slipper.
Thanks for listening.